Welcome to a special emergency post-match pod edition of the Counterpunch Podcast, a weekly Cracked Rackets production. Even though this is not in our regular schedule, alongside my co-host, Arjit Suresh, I'm Richard Mai, and we're here to break down specifically Carlos Alcaraz versus Novak Djokovic, the semifinal that, at least at the time of this recording, just concluded. What a match it was. It's not our usual breakdown, analyze, all that good stuff. We're here for this. It's the French Open. It's the clay court tournament of the year, and one heck of a match that we've been waiting for a very long time. Let's start off with, did it live up to our expectations?
Well, quite frankly, no, because we're doing an emergency podcast about an injury, but if you couldn't tell, I'm a little bit salty about the fact that we didn't get a full five hours of this match. Here's the thing. To answer your question, sets one and two lived up to expectations.
Absolutely.
It was fantastic. I did think that set one came out a little stale in terms of on Alcaraz's perspective. I think he came out a little bit unsure of himself and wasn't able to battle the way he thought he would, especially with how clinical Novak came out. I think Djokovic was phenomenal to start the match.
I literally tweeted at the end of the fourth set, so tough watching Alcaraz versus Djokovic. We've waited for this match for so long, and when we finally get it, Alcaraz isn't at 100%.
Yeah.
It's so tough. Like you said, those first two sets were absolutely exactly what we've been waiting for.
And to me, it felt like it was building, too. Like, it felt like it was like the first two sets were the buildup, and the third set was a crescendo. But now it just feels like a really bad movie because we just sat through, like, 90 minutes of buildup to zero payoff.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, there was, credit where credit's due. I mean, Alcaraz fought so hard, and it was so awesome to watch because he wasn't giving up. He wasn't backing down. There was no way that he was going to, you know, let it get to him and just, you know, play it off. And honestly, there were moments where he made that cramp look like nothing. But with that said, I mean, a cramp is so difficult. Yeah. And Novak said in his post-match, the last thing you want to get in these deep stages of a tournament is cramps and physical issues. Which was quite ironic, and then cut to a few minutes later, Rude and Zverev doing their physical preparations.
Yeah. I do want to mention this. About 10 minutes before it actually happened, Andy Roddick tweeted out, first he takes your legs, and then obviously that was in reference to his tweet from the US Open a couple years ago where he said, first Novak takes your legs, then he takes your soul. Well, quite frankly, he did take out Alcaraz's legs. I'm not even sure, though, if this was a physical ailment or not, because to me, a lot of it might just stem from the fact that Alcaraz got really hyped up for this match, was way more tense than his body, like, was way more tense mentally and physically than he normally is for any kind of match, because this had been hyped up for so many months, almost a year now.
Ever since Carlos entered that top 10, the world has been waiting, and I mean, like, with complete fairness, like, the world has been waiting for this match. I think these are two of, in my opinion, honestly, the only two players that you can look at, that I look at, and I don't see a clear-cut weakness.
Yeah.
Like, every player, there's something to break down there, but honestly, with these two guys, I think they're the only ones on the men's tour right now that I can genuinely say I do not see a clear-cut weakness.
Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe Djokovic gave a little bit of a weakness in that, you know, Alcaraz isn't 100% ready for the highest of highs against Novak Djokovic and only Novak Djokovic in best of five sets. But to me, it certainly felt like he was ready. It felt like he was battling and playing really, really well. I thought we were in for a really big contest. It's just unfortunate to see the fact that Alcaraz couldn't keep up at that rate. But I am interested to see how Djokovic prepares for his next match, because what he was able to do tactically in this match was phenomenal. His ability to reset points, the way he was hitting his forehand, because he knew that Alcaraz was going to punish anything that wasn't like pinpoint depth and accuracy, then I was just so impressed with how well Djokovic adjusted from their previous matchup and just came out guns blazing and took that first set.
Also, a huge thing that I noticed tactically with what Novak was doing is if you watched Alcaraz himself, the movements, he was stretched out way more often.
Yeah.
Last time they had played, you saw a lot more of, you know, Alcaraz being able to get to shots and it being within his range. And this time you're seeing him stretched out on most of the shots. Any shot that Novak was hit was, you know, hitting to him, you could see his body stretched out. Which shows a lot of, like you said, tactical awareness from their last meeting.
Really, it was just clinical from Novak. I mean, the way he was serving, I think he was winning almost like 78% or something on his first serve points in that first set.
All of the, like, so many aces in that final set. I mean, it was such strong serving, pinpoint accuracy.
I mean, I think maybe the ace count would have been a little lower if Alcaraz had the burst in his legs. That it's probably a couple more unreturned serves.
Yes, but still. I think the big thing is to know. I mean, yes, I fully agreed. If Alcaraz was healthier with the legs, he probably would be able to get there. But the pinpoint accuracy of Novak's serve, he found his spots and he hit them. Yes. He knew where he wanted to serve that ball and he got it. In that spot, it was very reminiscent of like a Kyrgios serve with the accuracy level.
To me, it felt like Djokovic played Alcaraz kind of the way that he approaches the Nadal matches, in that he's like just stretching him out wide, hitting really aggressive and deep forehands, and then like because Alcaraz likes to camp in that ad side corner, kind of the way Nadal does. Except Alcaraz is comfortable with his backhand and like being aggressive from there, but also backpedaling with his forehand, hitting the inside out, inside in drop shot pattern that he loves so much. I think he loves doing that so much that Djokovic was actually able to exploit that really well, especially with a couple of those down the line backhands that he was hitting. Obviously, no one hits a down the line backhand in today's men's game like Novak Djokovic, but I thought it was really, really impressive the way that he was able to manufacture that within these points.
Yeah. Well, there is a second semifinal that's going on right now. And obviously, whoever wins this one will look across the net to see Novak in the final. Where do we see... I mean, for starters, do we see Novak beating both, losing to both, beating one, not the other? Like, how do we see his, you know, chances? Because personally, I think he beats either of them.
Yeah, I think... it's a pretty comfortable matchup for him, especially if he gets rude. Like, I think that's... I know Casper... I think Casper's a better player on clay than Zverev is right now, and I think he is... Right now, obviously. I think rude is the favorite in that matchup, but I think Djokovic can comfortably beat both of them. Who would he like to see? I think he would prefer to see rude, actually, because Zverev can make things really difficult for him, especially if he's in the form to have beaten rude and is confident and in the final with nothing to lose. Things could get dicey for Novak, but I pretty much expect him to beat either guy, no matter who he gets. I think he's just playing better, and I think he just is better than them.
I agree with you that that rude is probably the best option if you're looking from the perspective of Novak. Like, who does he want to see? I think it is Rude. Just because I think that Rude's game fits what Novak can beat easier. In the sense of Rude's game, to me, when I watch Rude, it just feels very consistent. Like, it's the best way to describe his game. It's consistency, whereas Sasha's going for those big shots. He's taking those risks. He's, you know, he's taking his shots. When he's hitting with confidence, he's whamming that ball, and it's very difficult for anyone, no matter how good, you know, to return.
Well, I'm gonna push back on you there with the Rude thing, because I do think I think Rude is actually more aggressive than Zverev is, because Zverev does tend to play a little passive and starts counterpunching about 5 feet behind the baseline, especially when he's uncomfortable in matches. And I think that's the pitfall with him, is that when he's on, and he's stepping inside the court and like unleashing the forehand and backhand, he looks great. But there are times when he gets way too passive, whereas with Rude, I feel like it's just too one-dimensional to really hurt Novak. Like, especially given where he is. Like, we all saw the final from last year against Nadal. Like, Obviously, it's Nadal on clay, and that's just a really bad matchup given how high Nadal is able to get his forehand on Rude's backhand side. But you try and look at Djokovic and Rude's backhand-to-backhand exchanges and tell me that Djokovic can't do similar and beat Rude just hands down on the clay.
Sure. I also just think, I don't know. It's something about it. I mean, Casper is just very... It's very weird for me watching his matchup because I don't know. This is going to sound really weird, but I don't feel like there's that big of an X factor with Rude.
Yeah, Is that absolutely weird
to say? Like,
No. I get what you're saying. Like, he's a gatekeeper in the tennis community right now where he is going to beat everyone he's supposed to beat, hence why he's made such deep runs at the French Open in the past 2 years. But he's going to beat everyone who he's supposed to beat. There is a bit of a ceiling against the top most guys that I feel like Zverev has the ability to get there. I just think Rude is more likely to maximize on what he's doing than Zverev is.
Sure. I think that what you like you've mentioned before, I mean, Zverev has less to lose here, and so he's just going to come out swinging if he, you know, in this match and the next. If you remember where Sasha was a year, you know, 12 months ago, this is, you know, the time where that horrific injury happened, you know? And I think that it's going to push Sasha even more to step out of his comfort zone and really go for it, because you can't do worse than 12 months ago. That was rock bottom.
It's true.
He played great in that match. Yeah. But once that injury struck, I don't think there's anything lower than that moment.
Yeah,
like, it's so bad. And yeah, I think that it's only going to push him even more to really go for it, because he knows how badly he wants this. And if you watch how he's been playing up until this point, this is, I think, I mean, I don't think that he beats Novak. I think he can take it to four. He can even take it to five, potentially, depending on how he plays those first two sets.
Yeah. But I mean, I think both of them can push Novak. I just don't think either of them have what it takes to beat him.
Yeah. I mean, you have to think about endurance in five sets. It's what we talk about a lot when you compare someone like Novak, who in his mid-30s has played God knows how many, you know, slam finals. What is it, 30-something, right? 30?
So I just saw the stat, but I think he's just reached his 36th or 34th, which is tying Steffi Graf for the most all-time.
It's insane. But I think what this shows is, even if he loses that slam final, having gotten there so many times, the amount of five setters he's had to play and amount of times he's had to endure that. I think back to the final against Kyrgios at Wimbledon, the final against Tsitsipas at the French Open a few years ago. It's endurance. It's, can you last the five, you know, the full five sets? And when I talked about, when I mentioned about like Rude and consistency, I feel like what I mean by that is, I feel like Rude's game is more based on, can I outlast my opponent and how can I force them into making mistakes? Whereas Sasha's is more, let me take a bajillion, like, they're both aggressive in their own right, but I feel like Rude's is more, let me like force a mistake. Whereas Sasha's, I feel like is winners, or just all out, flat out, let's go for it. Do you get what I'm saying? And I feel
I get what you're saying, but I'm going to disagree because
sure.
I feel like what Zverev mostly relies on is his ability to counterpunch from behind the baseline. And like, he relies on his court coverage. That's been the main issue with Sasha Zverev for the past 5 years, is he gets too defensive in the big moments. Rude is more likely to go for it. I just don't think he has enough to actually pack enough of a punch to beat those who are better than him. Like, the way he uses his forehand as an aggressive weapon it's there. Like, that it's a really good weapon, especially on clay, where like the attributes of it are magnified. But I just don't feel like he has what it takes. Whereas with Zverev, I feel like in the matchup with Djokovic, I kind of see it as the way Medvedev approaches that, which is like, those are probably the two guys who feel like, okay, I can last with Djokovic and I can just force him to out-aggressive me. if that's not a word, but you guys have got what I was saying.
Yeah.
But he can, like, that's how I feel.
Regardless of what the tactic is, I think the most important thing to note for both of these guys when you're going up against Novak is you have to play full-out aggressive. Because you can't get into a deep rally with Novak. The longer
Unless
the
your
rally
name is
goes,
Daniil Medvedev.
Sure. But the longer the rally goes, the bigger chance Novak wins the point. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And you need to keep points shorter.
And the problem is, it's, yeah.
You need
and the
to
problem
keep
is,
points
yeah.
shorter with him.
Yeah. And the problem is, Djokovic is very good at keeping points short on his own side. So, like,
exactly.
You don't really see a pathway to a win against him if you're Ruud or Zverev, which.
I think the perfect example of how you have to play against Novak Djokovic, and I can't believe I'm saying this, it is Nick Kyrgios' first set of that Wimbledon final. That is how you beat Novak. Your serve needs to be on point.
Yeah, or more specific. Well, you need cheap points. You need
Nick's
cheap points.
Nick's serve, if I can take any like serve from any pro player, I'm not taking John Isner, I'm not taking Anderson, I'm taking Nick Kyrgios. Because difficult to read. B, he finds his spot and he hits it perfectly.
Yeah.
Like that's what you need to do against someone like Novak. It's so hard to predict for any level player to predict where Nick's gonna serve. Like so many players on the serve, like when you watch pros, they can tell where the serve's gonna go based off of racket pronation or wrist or something in the body. With Nick, you can't tell that. You don't know where it can go out wide down the tee in the body. You need that level of unpredictability. And then from there, I don't know how to describe it. Nick was keeping points short. They weren't dragged out. They weren't long rallies. There was minimal long rallies in that first set. I just don't know how to describe it because it was exact. In my opinion, that is how you need to play against Novak. You cannot let him predict you. He has so much experience and he has such a high tennis IQ.
Yeah. Or you just, you have to be like that, or you just have to have the power of a guy like Stan Wawrinka or Dominic Thiem where you can bully Novak from the baseline and like just force him to not be able to generate any depth on his strokes, which I don't think either of these guys have to that extent. Like they can make it really difficult and suffocate Novak in ways, but he'll be able to wriggle out just in the nick of time.
Now, let me also say this. I don't know how well you've been filling out your brackets, Archit, but I've been filling out mine religiously. And I did pick Alcaraz to win this match. Obviously, I couldn't foresee what was going to happen.
Yeah.
But the reasoning for me is because Alcaraz plays a game that can counter Novak's in that. Alcaraz hits nice, deep into the court with heavy topspin, works perfectly on a clay court. But with that said, he also has the tools in his arsenal that will throw him off. Effective, clean drop shots, slices, strategies that we were seeing in the first two sets, pushing Novak far, like deep into the court, and then a tactical, like very effective drop shot. It wasn't high, it wasn't too slow. It was a perfect drop shot. That is the kind of game that also throws him off. Because, Novak's great and all, but you can't expect anybody to run from deep into the court, across the entire court to receive that drop shot.
Yeah, it works. He was doing it really well, actually. Yeah. Like,
and it
works
so well.
Djokovic was countering the drop shot very well for the first two sets. I really don't think Alcaraz was playing the best tactical match for the first two sets, but his shot making and his speed and his natural instincts just allowed him to battle through and take
that
second set. He's
just such a natural. He's just such a natural athlete.
Yeah, some guys are just born to be professional athletes, and Carlos Alcaraz is one of them. But I really thought he was starting to find something tactically and near the end of the second set, and he was gonna like ride it out near the end of the match, but he just couldn't. Obviously, because his body just didn't let him.
Well, so to end things off here, now we've talked a lot about Novak. Now looking at Carlos, how do you move forward from this? We have only, about 2-3 weeks now, and then we're into Wimbledon. So how, if you're Carlos, if you're part of Carlos's team, how do we move forward from this? Do we feel like it's severe? You know, what are we doing here?
I'm not really worried long term. Like, I think he'll be okay. First things first, just go drink plenty of fluids, get some rest, drink, eat as much food as you can, do your stretches, do your whatever your physio recommends. That's what you have to do in that scenario. And you just kind of wait it out. Like, he was already starting to look a little better near the end of the match, so I assume that he'll be fine long term. I don't think it really taints his prospects for the grass. I do feel like he'll look at this tournament as an opportunity missed, though, because he was playing so, so well. And, you know, he had battled Novak even. So, like, in that scenario, I think he fancies his chances of coming away with the second slam. So, and, you know, the grass isn't his favorite surface yet. He just hasn't had enough time to play on it. So I'll be interested to see how he fares at Wimbledon. But overall, I'm not overly concerned about anything.
I think you take at least this upcoming week to do some personal training. I know a lot of players will use these upcoming grass court tournaments as, you know, their grass court training. But honestly, just do some personal training, physio, you know, all of that good stuff, stretches, working out those muscles. And then just doing some hitting sessions, getting used to the bounce of the grass. Maybe do one small grass tournament and just go all out. Like, not push your body to the very limit, but just have fun with it. Use it as an opportunity to really feel out the grass in the match scenario where it's not best of five sets and where it's not as high stakes as it will be in Wimbledon. Take the opportunity to just get used to it.
I still don't think we've seen him play an ATP-sanctioned event on grass other than Wimbledon, obviously.
Yeah. I think it's a smart move for any player, not just Carlos, but for any player. Take at least one of these tournaments in the next few weeks to just understand and get used to. Because it is, we talked about it before, it is the hardest transition.
Yeah.
From clay to grass is the two opposites. So take this opportunity to really get used to the grass. With that said, any final remarks?
Well, I do want to bring up two quick things, although I don't know how quick we can be, but
go for it.
Novak going for 23 obviously would be the record, maybe even cements him as the greatest of all time. We'll see. Everyone's going to have their opinions on that, and we don't want to get into that, but calendar slam on, ? Because, I mean, we saw it in 21, won the French Open, immediately his sights were on.
We also saw it in what? Was it 21?
Yeah, 21.
That Medvedev won the U.S. Open, and ruined the...
And he was one match away, lost in the final of the U.S.
And
Open.
And can I be honest? Honestly, I think we start calendar watch, but I think it happens again. And I think it's Carlos this time who ruins it at the U.S. Open.
I think...
It's going to be Carlos or Medvedev. That is my opinion.
I don't know. It's so tough to win.
One of those two is winning the U.S. Open. I'm not that confident in...
The only problem is it's so tough to defend a U.S. Open title. No one's done it since Federer in 2007, 2008.
Yeah, you're right.
So, interesting for Carlos. We'll see how that goes. But I really like Medvedev at this year's U.S. Open.
The U.S. Open is so tough to defend just because it's just such an open field.
And bar in mind that, like,
in Australia is the beginning of the year. Now you've had this entire season going for you, especially the North American swing, like the Cincinnati, Canada, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, all those tournaments build up to this culmination. It's so tough because there's so many players and factors
and
should
and
be
at
kept
that
in
point
mind.
In the season, everyone has grinded through an entire year's worth of matches, so it's just tough on the body. Also, keep in mind that Djokovic hasn't played at the U.S. Open since that fiasco where he hit the lines. Oh wait, no, 2021, where he lost
the Medvedev.
But he hasn't played since then. But he hasn't played since.
The other thing I just think is also with the U.S. Open, players come out of the woodworks. Out of absolutely nowhere. Like, if you think about last year, Khachanov and Tiafoe. Like, no one picked Francis Tiafoe to be in the semifinal. And even though he's a great player, no one expects, you know, these players to go that far. And you never know who's going to play some of their best tennis. And I feel like sometimes it does, wait and come out at the U.S. Open. I just feel like it comes out, I mean, it always comes out of someone at some point, right? Throughout the entire season. But I feel like it most often comes out during the U.S. Open. So do I think calendar watch is on? Sure. Yes. Do I think that it will happen? Do I think it will happen? No. But last question to end it off.
Yeah.
Do we think 23, if Novak does win 23 now, do we think the 23 is the end, or do we think there's more after 23?
No, I think he gets to 24 easy.
I say there's more. I say 25.
Yeah.
I say he stops at 25.
We'll see.
Because it all just depends on health and... Also, knowing Novak's personality, I think he's going to want to stop as number one ever. Yeah. Both men's and women's, which would be 25. And he is in the physical condition to do so.
Yeah, I think...
At 35, to be in this good physical condition? Come on.
He's 36 now, but it really doesn't matter at this point.
He plays like he's 28. Like,
yeah. Yeah, like... He'll be fine physically. I think it just depends on three factors: his health long term, his motivation, and how good Alcaraz and Runa and Sinner get.
Yeah. Well, with that said, keep up to date with everything that's happening in this Cracked Rackets community from online, crackedrackets.com, at Suresh Archit, at RichardMayo3. Follow us on Twitter.
Rackets on Instagram.
Watch everything we're doing. We'll be keeping you all updated with the most up-to-date possible information that we have available to us as well. Anything from your end?
Yep. And once again, a special shout-out to super producer Daniel Westoff for the editing job that he does day in, day out here at Cracked Rackets. He is the reason that you will be getting this as fast as possible and the sole reason that we're able to do emergency podcasts. So thank you, Westoff, and we'll speak to you guys soon.
With that said, we will catch you guys for our tournament recap of the French Open in, a few days? All right, we'll catch you guys next time. See ya.